the Facebook thing.
Yeah. Nobody cares about hearing us chatting.
No, but I tell you, it's a bit tricky. Like, once upon a time, you were able to do it, like schedule the multi-stream on Facebook. But now you can't. And you have to just wait for it and press it on. So there you go. Mm-hmm. Ah, so I've lost Adam already, which is a great start. We're technically not live, so.
Hopefully not. Hopefully I'm still here, am I not? Can you hear me?
Oh, people can still see Adam, but I can't. So that's good. All right. Well, we may as well get started. So welcome, everybody, to Brain Food Live on Air. This is episode 29. So we've been doing this for, you know, nearly over half a year, I guess. And we're delighted to still be here. So for people who don't know, we do this show every week where we can. And ultimately, we do it to review the great content that we shared in the newsletter on Sunday, the stuff that we've been talking about in the Facebook group throughout the week. And also, we get some special guests on to talk about a particular topic. That's the top and tail of the show. And I am your host, Hung Lee, and I'm joined, as ever, by my co-pilot, Adam Gordon, who's going to take us through it. So, Adam, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm good, thanks. it's been a pretty tiring week, I've got to say. You know, we were both in Amsterdam for a few days, and then you get back and you've got 3 days' worth of your actual day job to get through. So, you know, conference season's pretty tough. I was away Thursday, Friday as well. It's really just the start, isn't it? And it goes right through till about early November now. It's much worse for you than me.
Yeah, don't tell me about it. For me, essentially, there's no free time until about November, and it's going to be on the road, in and out of airports. There's going to be lots of things not done that I should be doing. So, but there you go.
So the big difference between you and me is I pay to go to events. You get paid to go to events.
Actually, I wish that was the case. I think I can just about get travel and expenses sorted. But yeah, fees aren't flowing my way. Let's put it that way. Anyway, how was the recruiting brain food for you last week? Did you have time to read it?
Yeah, I did. And I've just spent about 5 minutes going back through it. And I've now remembered why I didn't do one of my big like LinkedIn posts, which is, here's the 10 things that I really enjoyed in Brain Food this week. And Hung Lee is Calvin Harris of recruiting content. And it's because, I got to be honest, I didn't understand quite a lot of it. So some of your content is absolutely bang on recruitment. Some of it is kind of future of the planet and more intellectual than I always get to understand. There was quite a lot of like proper philosophical stuff in there this week.
But was there really? I'm trying to figure out what you were talking about.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot of content around, let me see, things like the neuroscience of trust and stuff like that. I mean, it's really valuable stuff. Like, people that are already big experts around relationship building and stuff might want to go into the neuroscience of trust, but it's pretty technical content. But it was a great brain food. I mean, absolutely great brain food. I just needed longer than normal to read it.
You know what? It was a bit of a challenging one, but I came across it. It's actually published in 2017, so quite an old one. But really, it was a fantastic thing from HBR, combining two disciplines, like what happens in the neurochemistry when you trust someone. And that was a really interesting thing to observe. So just shared it in the chat stream there. Check it out if you want to learn about what goes on in your brain when you like somebody and you trust them.
Yep. So the things that really resonated with me were, and the one which actually a lot of people have mentioned to me, was Andy Foote's, here's LinkedIn's algorithm explained. Now, this is not actually factual because he doesn't work in LinkedIn's algorithm team, and that they're the only people that absolutely know, because it tweaks, it gets tweaked every single week. But he's probably the person that I know who is most likely to be able to decipher it, because he's studying it all day and he's studying what works and what doesn't work. So that is a really great article. I need to remember who it was that asked me.
Can I say one thing on that?
Mm.
That was the most clicked article ever on recruiting brain food.
Wow. Okay. Well done. Brilliant work.
Well done, Andy Foote, on that. We've had Andy on the show before, and he is one of the experts on this thing. He's a complete amateur. I mean, I'm sure, forgive me for saying that, because he's not an engineer and he's not an algorithm designer or anything like that. He just spends his time on LinkedIn and tries to figure out what type of content flies there. And his 25 answers to his questions were fantastic. You absolutely have to read that post if you care about inbound marketing.
Absolutely. It was great. The next one that I really quite enjoyed reading was a piece of content of yours. You don't often put a lot of your own content in there. You're normally kind of the commentator, but your How to Hire in Poland article was excellent.
Ah, yes.
So it's interesting the way different countries have different nuances. They've got different job boards. They've got different customs, different kinds of approaches work. So
you know what? You say it's my content, but actually it's crowdsourced content, as everything I do is. So this is all from the Polish recruiters that subscribe to Recruiting Brain Food. So big shout out to all the people who did that. And this project emerged simply because we were aware that of these local differences that can actually make a decisive difference in how you recruit. One of the things that is true in recruiting is that we have a universalistic attitude to it. You know, we often provide solutions that sound as if they would work across all countries and off all territories. Mm-hmm. But this exercise tells you that that isn't the case. There's lots of interesting nuances, as you say, little laws that you shouldn't have these second and third order effects that transform how you need to recruit. So yeah, everyone please read that if you're interested in Poland.
Yeah, I mean, to be perfectly honest, even in the UK, you can split it up in at least two ways. One is how you recruit in London versus how you recruit outside London, because it's just a different thing. So
Every city, and we're going to do guides, by the way, for every country where we've got more than 20 responses. So there's going to be 20 to 25 guides produced. I think Czech Republic might be next, and then we'll do a big one like Germany or Netherlands or something like that.
Yes, great. Okay, so Germany's is going to be quite interesting, because like Germany versus the Netherlands, there's like no comparison on how you can do recruitment. It's just the culture is so different. So the third one that I want to talk about, fourth one I want to talk about is Facebook and the Facebook changes. First, got rid of graph search, and now there are very technical ways that you can kind of replicate graph search, but you need to be almost like a DevOps to be able to pull it all together. The next one's their pivot to privacy around advertising and the options for so things like lookalike audiences are getting attacked by governments, by US senators, and so a lot of this is to do with the fact that you need to make best use of these Facebook products. You've got to upload email addresses and potentially other data from people who might not be on Facebook and whose data they might not have access to. This got me thinking, hold on, LinkedIn's doing exactly the same. There's absolutely no way that LinkedIn allowing you to upload a list of your, you know, your personal contacts from your mobile phone is compliant with GDPR. So Germany's looking at that one as well.
And actually, LinkedIn lost a quite important court case this week as well. But this relates slightly adjacent in terms of the topic, but they lost at least they lost round two or three against HiQ, which was a company that basically sits on top of LinkedIn's data to produce aggregated some sort of sentiment analysis or what have you. But yeah, we're having legal and ethical conversations about data. And the big implication for us as recruiters is that recruitment advertising, especially using tools like lookalike audiences and what have you, is going to get harder. And probably in terms of bang for buck, it's going to be less effective over time. And I think that's the price we're going to have to pay for more user protections. It ultimately means that for a recruiter, life is going to get harder.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other ones that I wanted to quickly touch on was actually more so in the news bit, like the what are you doing bit.
Yeah,
so,
okay.
Brilliant work, Arctic Shores. My friends at Arctic Shores, they've raised a pretty large chunk to make gamified recruitment even more sophisticated. You know those guys?
I do. Robert's a great guy. I know Bianca as well, who does the marketing. Arctic Shores sponsored Brain Food a couple of weeks ago, so they're one of our friends here. Delighted to see how they've done.
Yeah, absolutely. And then the other one was the other big one in that kind of same sort of area of interest is Culture Amp. Raised something crazy, like 100 million or something like that. Series E, I think they call it. So they've raised a vast amount of money. And yeah, they are not going to be, that is not going to be a product that's core purpose is measuring employee happiness this time next year.
No.
Going to be doing things that are much more mainstream, I would expect.
I mean, people are more expert at me about what happens when you raise a huge amount of money. We'll tell you what the roadmap is there. But internal mobility, a sentiment analysis, team building internally. I can see all that happening for Culture Amp. And you know what? It's fantastic because you know, Bill is on the chat stream there and he's going to come on later. But I remember meeting Damon Klotz back in the day when he was just a young kid. He still is a young kid. I think he's 30 years old or something. But he's now one of their top execs and he's done amazingly well. And nothing could please me more to see that.
Yeah, absolutely. Just wanted to respond to Alfred's point or question. Will the UK remain GDPR compliant after the 31st? Of October, presumably, that's what he means. So GDPR is not legislation. So it's not a law in the UK or anywhere else. It's
It's a
directive. However, the UK has implemented legislation which effectively is faithful to GDPR. So yes, the UK laws will remain faithful to GDPR, but that doesn't mean that most recruitment agencies will. So let's just see what happens. The UK is still not, it's not going to be leaving the, it's not going to be leaving the EU on the 31st of October anyway.
But the reality of it is by automatic operation of the law, we are out. Than 5 weeks away.
We'll see. So about a year ago, I told Hung I was going to buy him a pair of Converse if we actually ever do leave the EU. And I still don't think I'll fork out for those, to be honest.
No, I think we're out. I think we'll fudge it. It can only be fudged, to be honest. I think there needs to be so many things that stop at the exit. It's just too much in a way.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I think Bill's right. Anyway, anything else before we move on to our special guest this week?
Yeah, I mean, some weeks I could talk for the whole hour about the brain food. This week, quite a lot of it was just a little bit over my head, to be honest.
Too intellectually stimulating. To be honest with you, no. I mean, I'm trying to solicit feedback from the brain fooders as to what kind of content you want to see. And overwhelmingly people want to see two types, which is give me more sourcing tools, which okay, I'm going to give you some sourcing tools, but that will never be the main thing in brain food. And the other side of it is, look, we want to see stuff that we're not going to see anywhere else. So hence, you're going to get blacksmiths and executioners and stuff like that as well. Anyway, so we're here to talk about employer branding, which is a hugely important and interesting topic. But before we guess on, I just want to address a conversation that we very recently had on Twitter, in which we've had a number of respected people commentate about the lack of diversity on this week's show. And it is true to say that having seen the selection of the people on there, they are all white males. So firstly, I need to say that is 100% on me. So from a guest selection point of view, that is Hung Lee's responsibility. I need to be more mindful of this going forward. I think people would know that having a diverse set of voices is an important thing for us, especially when we talk about the topic of employer branding. And in fact, I hope to weave that into the conversation that we'll have, because the guests we've got on have got far more experience on this topic than I do. So there's no excuses there on my side. I mean, as a media person now, I guess, running a live stream and a podcast, that needs to be a responsibility I need to take seriously. So I take that on board, appreciate the feedback and the bravery it takes to step up and make that feedback public. And we'll do better next time.
I just want to add one really quick thing to that. In Hung's just kind of taking responsibility for that. In Hung's slight defense, I absolutely know that he has done a lot of hard work in the 29 weeks that we've been on air to make sure that we have got a good diverse cross-section of people coming and joining the shows. It's very, very rare that we have this issue. And it's absolutely not, you know, it's not in any way deliberate, and it's not out of some effort by Hung. I see what he does behind the scenes to try and generate a good cross-section of guests on here. It's definitely not intentional.
On this point as well, part of the thing that we're doing in the background that I haven't told many people yet is to provide a tool which is going to help me actually identify guests in more efficiently. So that will come out hopefully in the next week or two. And what it is simply a quick product we've built that I hope will enable us to collect information about what people are passionate to talk about. And when opportunities to get guests on board, we'll be able to access hopefully a larger amount of people much more efficiently than we're currently doing. Cool. Anyway, if anybody wants to come onto the show and have a chat with us on this, then let's have that conversation. The policy on this show is we have established guests that are kind of scheduled to come on, but we also invite people on screen if you've got a webcam and Wi-Fi. Anyway, first person on is actually Bill Bowman. And I believe this is the first time he's actually been on the show, which I know we are well overdue with. So, Bill, I'm going to invite you on right now. And I hope we can make it.
Yeah. Just while we...
Oh, here we go.
Right, okay. I won't steal his thunder.
Oh, wow.
I'm not wearing my hat.
There's so Bill.
On there.
Bill, you look like you're from... a scene from the 30th Encounters of the Third Kind.
I was expecting pitchfork mobs on this show, so I thought I'd better be in hiding a little bit in the dark.
no one's going to come after you, Bill. And on that note, by the way, I have to say that whenever there is a diversity issue, I think the responsibility does fall on the organizers. So this is why it's definitely my responsibility, not on the guests at all. You're not to know. I mean, you didn't know what the lineup was until you saw it. So that was it.
No, I think that's cool. I do think there's a broader issue that we which gets highlighted, that was what we're speaking about, not too long, in fact last week with a few people. That's what I think we need to see, diversity beyond the lens of male female split. There's a lot of other diversity we need to be challenging, a lot of other things we need to be thinking about, but I don't want that to take over the whole show, but there will be a blog coming out on that shortly.
A blog from you?
Yes,
dude.
I'm gonna start writing again, my friend.
It's been a long time, Mr. Borman, since you've been publishing your original content. So I'm looking forward to it if you're getting back on that horse.
Yeah, so and that's going to address that issue in terms of the breadth of diversity and how we need to think about it. But I don't want to get too tied up on that. So let's go on to the topic of employer branding and what you've asked me onto your esteemed show for the first time. I was starting to feel a bit left out.
Well, that's it. I mean, one of the things we wanted to talk about, firstly, Adam and I will step up and say we are not the experts at EB. You know, this is just not what we've done professionally. So we're a little bit going to be guided by the guests that we have. But one of the thoughts that we had is employer branding, you know, how do you ensure that you maintain your employer brand? So let's imagine that your employer brand is great. And you want to keep it great. How do you do that?
I think there's something I want to actually look at on there, and that's the trend. So one of the things I'm seeing, and I'm fairly sure the other guys will want to discuss this point a little bit, is I'm actually seeing employer brand as less of a thing in the place than it was. So one of the keynote I'm doing at the moment is Who's Moved Your Brand? What I'm seeing is employer brand is not a massive attraction thing. There's a lot of data behind that, that generally what we're seeing is more people are applying for more jobs with less preparation. However, what we are seeing is when you're tracking activity on career sites and content, what we're seeing is actually candidates are applying for anything up to 8 times more jobs on quite small, on quite a narrow choice of 3 or 4 things, which they want to be able to find. They want to be able to apply quickly. They're generally going straight to jobs from links to jobs rather than to content or comparing one brand with another, as we might think of as a shopper. However, once they've applied and got a positive response, that's when they're going after brand. So I think the position of brand has moved from being something which was geared around attraction and building following to being much more targeted around jobs and job brand, as in where the content's being consumed post-apply, not pre-apply. Load of reasons for that. When we dug into the data, I tracked about 7 million applications for a white paper for Olio on this topic, which people can download. I think you've featured it in Brain Food. And
I did as well.
What we're seeing from that is what we saw very clearly from that was that was not that employer brand wasn't as important as it ever has been, but actually candidates are not expecting to hear back, they're not expecting to get a response, and they don't want to get emotionally attached to a brand expecting there to be disappointment. And out of 7 million applications, it's only something like 5% that go in the top of the funnel. So what we're seeing is people coming in through advertising or triggers, what I would call recruitment advertising as opposed to marketing, like campaigns, but they're all over content and all over the employer brand stuff once they get a positive response. So applying for multiple jobs, but when they get a multiple response from people saying, yeah, come into the funnel, do the video interview, come into an assessment. That's when they're visiting the career site. That's when they're watching the videos. That's when they're consuming the content.
Okay. Do you think they're doing it? Sorry, Adam. Do you think they're doing it in order to prepare for an anticipated assessment? Or are they doing it because they want to then select further as to which businesses they're most interested in?
I think there's two aspects. One is if they're applying for multiple jobs and they're good candidates, they're getting pulled into a lot of funnels. So if they're applying for 8 jobs and they're well qualified and 5 of those companies are coming back and saying, come and look for us, that's when they want to make choices. Orders of priority between which one is interesting, where might I want to work. And they're actually consuming lots of content. In fact, more content than they used to at that point. So We're not saying employer brand isn't absolutely critical, but I think we need to change our thinking from attraction to the micro-targeting in terms of groups, what content we're delivering, how we're delivering it, how much we know about these people. The kind of content then that keeps people connected for employer brand is less around what we've done with traditional employer brand content over come work for us, here's our video, look at us, happy smiling faces, really what I'd call employer brand stuff that most people churn out. What's actually working is learning and development content. So learning content that probably already exists, which is being a major driver between do I choose this company over that company, who am I going to choose. So I think we're seeing employer brand in a different place, and the type of content that you know, this is why things work well for Adam. Once you've got people into a funnel and are identified by a discipline, it's the learning content that people are looking at to say, yeah, I'm interested in that, I want to know about that, I'm engaged in this topic. So I think we need to rethink. We actually need to think around what employer brand is. And for me, and whether we're looking at it on an employer brand on a broad basis of here's the company and here's everything about it, or whether we're actually looking at it on a micro basis, because the candidates are looking at it from jobs. Remember, we still think and talk as if candidates are looking for careers with companies, like they're going to come and we're attracting them in a way that says, come and work for us for 40 years, we'll give you a clock at the end of it, we'll promote you every 2 years. Reality is candidates are changing jobs every 2.6 years. That's a trend I think is going to go down. I think retention is becoming less common. And so they're really looking at jobs rather than careers. So less interested in the whole, more in how is this job going to make me more employable in the future? And I think the learning piece is massive around that. Am I going to learn new skills? I'm going to pick new things up so that my CV looks better when I send it out again in about 18 months' time. And we need to think of it like that in our whole strategy to say, is it even employer brand at all, or is it actually job brand? Because we should always be thinking, people are being brought in for jobs, and we should then be thinking around how we retain a relationship with that person forever when they're going to be looking for jobs a lot more times in their career than they used to.
Bill, you talked about people are applying for jobs, and then if they're getting a successful response, they're then going learning more about the company.
Yeah.
Are you talking about?
But, so I would add to that. They're looking at the company through the lens of a job. So it's less about the broad company, and much this role. Who are the people? Who are the team? What's the learnings? What's the disciplines? What's the specific skill topics?
Yeah, more it's likely job to content. Like, what are you going to do? Okay. What are you going to be? Who are you going to do it with?
So the area,
and they're looking at it to either choose between jobs or to be more successful in the interview process.
So, Bill, I mean, I will challenge slightly on that and tell you that there are a lot of different types of professionals who are definitely, definitely not applying for jobs and then working out who they've applied to later. So qualified accountants, qualified lawyers, digital transformation specialists, they're doing deep research on businesses before deciding.
I don't believe that, Adam. I don't hold by that. That, you know, that's not what I'm seeing. What they're following is they're following content and learning. They're not following companies in terms of, oh, I want to go and work for this one, or oh, I want to go and work for that one. And what then triggers them to apply is them being connected through learning content and receiving a job which triggers an application to the job. However, once they've applied, they are looking at other jobs.
Just let me stop there. I think what Adam's saying is that maybe different the professions would view it differently. Because if you're a lawyer, probably you're in a smaller world.
No, the data doesn't show that at all. What the data, the two things that we saw very clearly from the tracking that we did was that the ratios were roughly the same, the volumes were different.
But are you including the ratio, like lawyers?
And the behaviours were very similar, regardless of the discipline. The only difference was there wasn't a lot of people in that. There was less people in that funnel because there's less people in the market. But the actual behaviours of what people were doing didn't really change. It didn't really change from discipline to discipline or even level of seniority. I was expecting the opposite. The results were not what I was expecting to find.
So I can completely understand that in areas like retail and call center and those types of professions.
I'm talking about technology. I'm talking about high level technology, pharma, high level banking and finance.
So it's
JP Morgan. It's in organizations like that. So
it's in complete conflict with the data that I have, because the data that I have is showing that candidates are clicking over, potentially months, even like more than a year. They continue to engage with that organization. But
where are they coming from? Where are they coming from? When they get into that pipeline, where are they coming from? They're being attracted in by jobs.
No, they're not.
Adam, what was the majority of what we're seeing with any of the nurturing software, including what you're doing, as I understand it, is we're working off the back of ATS application and data and people who signed up for a talent network. Those people have come to sites over time for a reason. The trigger that we're seeing that's bringing them there is generally jobs, but it's content that keeps them there, that keeps them connected, that is sticky. That's why there's a very real opportunity within niches for technologies like yours and others. Other brands are available.
Yeah, no, you are right. You are right. A lot of the people that come into a pipeline are going to be, they will have applied for a job in the past, but we are seeing.
Or they've gone to a job. They haven't necessarily applied for a job. They've been drawn in by a job, sometimes by curiosity, sometimes to apply, and then you enable through technology for them to remain connected, or to go look at something else. So that's the whole thing of the tactics, I'd say, recruitment tactics, which I see as being the strong piece in attraction, sitting as in what brings people in, what triggers them, and then what's their behaviour afterwards. And then the challenge is, how do we stay connected with them forever?
So, Bill, Brian, a couple of questions. Brian's asked if you can define learning content a little bit more.
Yeah, I'd love to do that. So what I found is I'd go into an organisation, like, for instance, BBC or wherever, and NASPERS in particular recently, and be told, oh, the first issue we had is taking a content approach. We don't really have any content. We understand that we want to build content rich websites, et cetera, but we don't really have any content or what we perceive as traditional content. Actually, when we've gone back and said, okay, and I've said, let me go and talk to the learning and development team. That's why I believe recruiting and learning and development will ultimately become one single function within HR.
It's happened.
That's my vision of where we're going. Learning content, which is sharing knowledge and illustrating the knowledge within the organization, is the strongest piece of employer brand, because that's really one of the key ways that people are selecting the difference between organizations. So if you can run learning events, live events, online events, digital events, if you can run communities the equivalent of what you've done, say, with recruiting brain food, if you can showcase your employees, and it's never about, here's a job, come work here. It's about, right, this is what we know about security. This is stuff we can share with you. Very, very little is actually proprietary secret. When you're sharing that knowledge and learning in a public sector, people will stay connected. And it's very easy once people start to get into that into that learning, it's easy to see who's engaged with it in order to say, did you want to come in and talk about it?
Couldn't agree more. The content that is moving people to take more interest in employers, that from the data I have and the experience that I have, is it's content that's going to help them with their careers. It's useful. It's relevant. It's not saying, here's a job opportunity.
Well, it's just interesting to them when they're in that discipline.
Yes. You know,
so if you're working in something like technology, the more geeky technical it is, the more interesting it becomes. So, yeah. You know, and you gave a great example
here. Because I would love to see some of this content. Where would you point to? I mean, either of you two.
Go and have a look at what people like Cisco are doing, or IBM. I think some of what Adam's done with Specsavers around kind of optometrists, where you've got a very specific discipline. There's lots of content out there which is geared around learning. If you look at some of what NASPERS is putting out now, from the various NASPERS companies, there's 150 of those, where we're really looking at what can we take from a learning environment. And you might not even see it in a recruiting lens, because what's going out is invitations to meetups, is webinars, is sessions on very technical discipline-based learning. I think part of this is going to be, the more that people move companies, the more they're going to lose traditional corporate learning. So if you're in a company, your traditional path was every 18 months, you would have done at least one career development review. We would have sent you on a course, imprisoned you in a classroom. You would have learned some stuff. We promote you and we train you every year. The more people don't work for companies for shorter periods of time, the more learning goes from being something which was provided by companies to something which people have to do for themselves, and a lot of cases have to do for free. So if you can provide that high level of learning, if I learn from someone, if I watch a webinar or a session in a discipline that I'm interested in, just think about it in recruiting terms, right? Recruiters, think about how many people go to an event like SOSU or SourceCon, read the sourcing stuff, and then go, oh, I want to go and work with CLO because I want to go and work with Balash. I want to go and work with this person because I'm learning stuff from them. And what could I learn? I want to go work with. I remember Balash going to work for Glenn Cathy for that very reason, saying, it's his blog. I learned my stuff from him. That's who I want to go and work for. That's massive.
All right. One more thing. I just, no, I'm going to bring Brian on soon because he's asked some great questions, and I've just seen them in the question tab, and I didn't see him in the stream, but I'm going to get him on shortly. But before I do that, I just want to address David's comment, where David's talked about the tech companies being particularly good at this. And that's very interesting, he said, because there seems to be an engineering section in a lot of these tech companies that are addressing directly this audience that they want to recruit from. I wonder whether they've been sensitized to it by the challenges of recruiting for tech. They've had to get deeper into it.
It's kind of easier, Hung. The answer to that is it's easier in tech because there is something to teach. It's much easier to define these are the learning pieces in tech. And they've been quicker to recognize that the attraction is around learning. That's what will bring people in, not on the happy videos that we've been spending millions of dollars making. But you can actually apply it in any discipline. Any discipline will make it work.
You can, as long as there's something that the people are going to learn that's going to help them with their career. So the best example I know is Specsavers, who run an initiative in Northern Europe called Green Club. They don't mention Specsavers anywhere. It's an online community. It's offline events program. It's all about learning and development for optometrists. It's all about technology, innovation, better ways of treating patients, better ways of making money, the store director. And
could I just answer two questions on the feed? Sorry to interrupt you, Adam, but I've just picked a couple of things up that I wanted to answer. Andy has said data on the impact of content on active and passive candidates. There are no active and passive candidates. Just let's forget that principle. Let's move on from that. The second thing is,
well, hang on,
David.
Why would you say there's no such thing as active or passive candidates? That's a pretty well.
I think if we look at the length of service with companies, everybody is in the market. Employer readiness, in which people are more likely to move than less at different times, but I think everyone is thinking about their next job, not their next career. So
agreed.
The people have moved, the companies haven't. And this is part of our how we need to rethink. Now, the other thing that I wanted to pick up on is David Galley is saying regulation compliance is a common topic people use for this, a lot of industries, but it's so boring. It is boring, but it's not boring to people who need to know that stuff.
Yeah.
If I work in regulating compliance, if content is boring to me because it's too technical or too difficult to understand, it'll probably be really good, and only the right people will engage with that content. Well, only people I would want to hire.
Technical sourcing is really boring for regulatory compliance people.
That's probably true.
Yeah, and all that stuff, right?
Okay.
And Bill, I'll shut up now so you can get behind.
No, Bill, before I let you go, because I know the sun is shining and I dare say beer's be coming on your way anytime soon. I just want to ask one more question. If you could say to a company, give them one bit of advice to future-proof their employer brand, what would that be?
I think really you've just got to work on looking at what attracts people. The first thing is move it and create conversations and connections. And if you're running employer brand, if you're working in recruitment marketing, whatever you're doing, your job's to mobilize, not to manage. So you got to mobilize what's going on and make sure the connections are out there. That sometimes means you need to put a bit of tech behind it, but don't try and overanalyze that. Andy, I'll gladly answer that question another time. I know Brian wants to get in and we'll have a talk about it. Come to True London on November the 7th.
Where is
a plug for you?
Absolutely. Everyone should go to True London. Bill, do you have the link for that?
It's True London N. True London 10N. And I'll plug it in comments. When you move on from me, I'll pull it up and stick it in comments.
Do that, Bill, because I think everyone should go to this event. It is a 10-year anniversary of one of the best events that I've ever been to, and it promises to be spectacular. Bill, I'm going to say goodbye to you. Hopefully, I'll see you next week. Are you going to Cologne?
I'll be in Cologne. I'll see you in Cologne. Zucon
awesome. I'll see you there, man.
Feel like foreigners. While my partner.
All right. So always interesting to get Bill on screen, even though, I was a bit disturbed by the halo effect that he had in the back there. But we're going to move swiftly on because I'm really keen to get Brian Cheney on. He's been waiting very patiently, and he's got some really great comments already on this chat stream here. So let's get Brian on and see what he has got to say about the topic at hand.
So I just while Brian's coming on, I agree with almost everything Bill said there, but lawyers are not applying to jobs as lawyers with other law firms and then go and finding out about it. But that said...
Yeah, I agree with you as well.
Bill's generally right,
but I think he's overstated it.
Yeah, no, he is. Most of what he said is absolutely right. And the concept of using learning and development content to kind of interact and keep relationships going with people is completely, absolutely bang on correct.
I think Brian's about to come on.
Should be here.
I'm not sure where he is. I think we might.
Yeah, I can hear and see you.
Is he there?
Yep.
Oh. Brian, how are you doing?
I'm good. Apologies to everyone who can now see me.
Hung's gone. Where's he gone? Brian, have you lost Hung as well?
Yeah. It says waiting for him to reconnect.
Okay. Let's just go through some of the points that you made just while we're waiting for Hung to come back. In fact, first of all, Brian, do you want to just give yourself a quick introduction? Because not sure. Everybody will necessarily know you. So who are you and what do you do?
Hi, so Brian Cheney. I lead employer brand for corporate recruiting at Indeed. I've been in the employer branding recruitment marketing space since 2004. And one of the other many side hustles that I have is I founded a community of recruitment marketers and employer brand folks called the Talent Brand Alliance. And we have an event coming up in London next month. So for those of you who don't know me, follow me, connect, all the good things. But yeah, I love the fact that Bill, the contrarian, was throwing things out there and a lot of them actually got my brain thinking in a different way. But the fact that he's gone and now all I want to do is talk to him and ask him specific questions and have him like follow up to some of the things that he said.
Okay, so I speak to Bill about once every 2 days and I think I know everything that he thinks about this because he told me a lot about it all the time. So let's like just generally, what's your sort of what are the most important things that you think people need to be thinking about when it comes to employer brand?
Well, so I think part of it is defining it. So in the UK, across Europe, there's a lot more history or legacy around employer brands. So the expectations are a bit different than they would be here in the States. So yeah. For me, my employer brand team manages recruitment advertising, marketing, employer branding. So when you think about content production, you think about career sites, videos, social media, all of those things, marketing collateral, all those things exist as well as reputation management on various sites. They exist under my employer brand team, but that's not always the case. And so sometimes employer brand is just, okay, you're working on the hires that we're going to make in 2 years versus the recruitment advertising, recruitment marketing, HR marketing folks who are saying, hey, we need to focus on the hires that we need to make next month. And so I think understanding that, kind of setting that playing field is first. But I think what people need to understand is that employer branding is much, much bigger than talent attraction and recruitment. I feel like it's the things that it impacts and impact it are much, much bigger. That just happens to be where we sit within the organization today.
Okay, so I've been involved in lots of arguments about whether employer branding is a facet of talent attraction or whether talent attraction is a facet of employer branding or is something adjacent to employer branding. Can you explain a little bit more about what you mean? It's much bigger than talent attraction.
So when you think about employer branding, it's not just getting people in the door. It's also managing the experience. It's also making sure that what you are selling is what you're delivering on the back end. And then it's every touch point. So are you supporting people? Are you actually helping them move in their careers? Is there internal mobility? Are you supporting their personal development within the organization? There's also internal comms and PR and all these other teams that are impacted by the employer brand and impact the employer brand, but they don't have the direct line item responsibility, or they just haven't drawn that conclusion. They're focused on their deliverables, and all of these things impact someone's impression of a company as an employer.
So do you believe that, okay, so actually within your specific responsibility is employee experience part of your area of
responsibility? So you cut out there a little bit, but my guess is you were asking if employee experience is under my purview?
Yes.
So it's actually not. So hang on with me for a moment. So employee experience is not directly, but employee experience does sit within HR within our organization as it does a lot of organizations. And so for us, part of what we do is employee advocacy, or we have brand ambassadors. And so I inherited this brand ambassador program. So now there's 600 people globally who volunteer to help out with four different pillars or four different teams within the company. And employee experience is one of those. Mm-hmm. So we are actually supporting employee experience quite directly by managing a team, incentivizing a team, growing a team of people who care about and want to volunteer to help the company.
Okay. So in terms of the kind of extent that employer branding is important for making you know, getting people to make decisions about who should I apply to, or that kind of thing. Where do you think it sits in the candidate's journey? Do you think it hovers above that? Tell me about the influence of employer brand on the candidate.
So I feel like employer brand is influencing the candidate before they start their job search. So when you think about employer brand, everything that you know of from employer brand is what you see on your TV program to what you're inundated with media wise, right? So you think about those companies who might have consumer facing products. So they spend the money to get in front of you. So it's you're impacting the companies that you think of when you think about, oh, who should I apply to? You're not thinking about the B2B financial services company and thinking, oh, I want to go work for that company because CFM Hill or whatever the case may be, right? I want to work for that. I've never seen them. I don't recognize them. I don't know what they do. But to Bill's point, he's like, well, they're only going after the job. Well, yeah, but does their job content suck? Is it searchable? Are they able to actually find their job content? And then once they found the job content, I've got no idea who this company is. Like I could buy this job. I could make this career purchase and buy this job right now. But I don't know what that experience is going to be like. I don't know if this is a reputable company. And then once you might apply, you might not. But at that point, especially if you've applied, then you go look for information to justify the application decision, the purchase decision that you've just made.
Okay, so it sounds like some of what you're saying is concurrent with what Bill's research found. But at the same time, you've said that employer branding does impact on whether or not people are going to actually apply to that organization. And I think that's probably right, because I was in a workshop last week with a one representative of Gen X, is it Gen Z? She's 21 years old. The new one that's coming into the workforce just now. And she said...
It's Gen Z.
Yeah, so she said, I want to work for a company that I already know what they do, I already like what they do, and I want to feel proud when I'm telling my friends and they already know what the company does. So I do think that that employer brand kind of does extend to the entire company brand. And that what I want to touch on just now is like, where's the handoff between overall company brand and employer brand?
So I don't view it as a handoff. So I view it as a 99% overlap. And why?
Yep.
Because there are a few companies that if you have a horrible candidate experience going through the process, that you would continue to give them money, right? So when you think about what's the most horrible customer experience that you've ever had, what kind of company?
For me, it would be Bank of Scotland.
Okay, so a bank. Let's just say a bank. Should I ask you if you've ever applied to a role at Bank of Scotland?
Yeah, I have. Many years ago, but yes, I have.
Okay, and when was the last time you gave them money?
That you didn't
expect back?
Today. I've used them for 20 years, but I just can't bring myself to leave.
Why is that?
I can't be bothered. I'm a customer. I've been a customer for 25 years and I can't be bothered leaving.
Okay. So what you're saying is to that point, they shouldn't spend any money on external branding and advertising because everybody's a customer for life.
Not quite, but I take your point, completely take your point.
So my point is also that there's a huge overlap and yep. most people, and the number is about 83%. I'll find it and I'll share it I might tweet it out, but the number is people who would choose not to give business to an organization where they've had a horrible candidate experience. Mm-hmm. It's huge. It's either 73 or 83, but I'll find it. It's huge. And so you understand that there's, and I think Virgin Airlines actually did a study a while back, and they had opportunity costs from horrible candidate experience. And they went back and they re-engineered their whole process. based on that, based on knowing that the people would tell them that they would stop flying with them.
Yeah. Okay,
so,
listen.
So there's huge overlap. Go ahead.
Yeah, so listen, you had quite a few questions around Bill's point about learning content. And so Bill's point is that companies need to keep extended relationships with people right through the course of their career. Everybody's a candidate from the moment they enter the workplace to the moment they retire. And if companies want to keep ongoing relationships with potential candidates, they can't do that with what we would classify as traditional employer branding, employee videos, and here's what it's like to work here, and yeah, here's the benefits and job descriptions. And that's, candidates don't want that. But what they do want is ongoing, useful, relevant content that is going to generate goodwill. So I think that's Bill's point around learning content. So useful, relevant things that are going to generate goodwill and are going to continue the cadence of that relationship, you know, throughout the periods where the people are not looking for jobs.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the only way that you're going to continue the conversation, right? So if someone's not motivated by what you've got to offer, if they're not motivated by the job, or if they're not motivated by changing a career, even though we say that they're not motivated by careers, that's the premise, right? Then if they're not motivated by what we're selling, then they're not going to be motivated to maintain that relationship, which means we're going to start that conversation over again every single time they want to change a job, right?
Yeah.
And so if we think about that in that way, I love the fact that Bill mentioned that, because that's why why I wanted him to define learning, because learning could be here's a specific shortcut to use in your tech stack, and here's a specific thing that you can use that's useful, right? Useful, valuable, interesting, even entertaining. Those are the things that we actually strive for, because we know that just marketing and selling the job, you're only selling one thing. It's like yelling that you're selling peanuts, and you could be walking through the section of people where everyone is deathly allergic. You don't know. So you have to understand that you have to have several different things that you're offering.
Yeah. Okay. Tell us what your event is, the talent branding event. Tell us what I know I asked you this myself online the other day. What do you mean by talent brand? Why is that? What's the difference between talent brand and employer brand to you?
Yeah. So traditionally employer brand. So it's interesting. We actually have, I'm going to be challenged by this, because one of the founders of the concept of employer branding, Simon Barrow, is actually going to be at the event. And he's already told me that he's going to challenge my thinking, and not necessarily just my thinking, but also in practice, because this event is for people who are in recruitment marketing, in employer branding, as a function largely of talent attraction. And so his premise is that it's actually much, much broader. And I agree with that. But part of his statement is, his opinion is that your function is to use that information to drive change within the organization. So you actually have responsibility to affect change as a result of what you're hearing, as a result of the message that you're delivering and the impact, the feedback that you're getting back. So that's the short version. The longer version is, I see talent branding as the entire encompassing scale of everything from before you even are aware of it, that a company exists, beyond being an alumnus of the company. So every touch point, whether that's impacted by internal comms, impacts that. Employee experience impacts that. People who are heads of culture and people impact that, as well as people in specifically in recruitment marketing and employment branding who are focused on the attraction, focused on the front end of that so-called funnel, right? So they're focused on getting the people in the door, but I think it's also connected to that experience and how it's sold from the pitch to the initial delivery, the education, the empowerment, to the person asking themselves 3 months, 6 months, 12, 8 or 18 months in, did I get what I was sold?
Mm. Yeah. Okay. I understand that, but I thought that's effectively what you described as employer branding.
So employer branding is effectively how a company wishes to be seen. That's how I view it. And okay. and it's great. I would love to be seen as a supermodel, but that's not happening. So it's a matter of what I can sell, what I have, the values that I have, and then me packaging that up based on an overlap of what the people around me tell me. So if all the people around me tell me I'm a supermodel, I'm probably gonna tell other people that I'm a supermodel, because that's the feedback, that's the information that I'm getting. But thankfully, I've got people around me who are a bit more honest. So I understand what I'm working with. And so each company understands, these are the values, these are the things that we have, this is what we're selling and delivering. And then they're amplifying that overlap so that the right companies are amplifying that overlap so that they're not putting things out there that they can't possibly deliver.
Okay, that's fine. So I don't know whether we need to meet in the middle and agree on a different definition, but my definition of talent brand is it's a facet of employer branding, and it is the brand of like your hiring managers and the people doing the jobs and using them, which normally manifests in things like career stories and that type of thing. Lee's got a question for you, which is, I don't know of the significance of the question, but Lee is interested to know if you've ever been a recruiter.
So I've never had the title of a recruiter. I've recruited, and I started my job in sourcing. So I was sourcing, identifying, having initial engagement conversations, getting yeah. people into the process. So yeah. not technically the title of a recruiter, but I've recruited for several years.
Yeah. Okay. So on Bill's remark, I may have used employer branding and employer brand interchangeably. I do know the difference between the two things. In terms of employer branding, I've got a challenge for you as a representative of the employer branding community. My challenge is that if I look at most employer branding activities today that large organizations do, it's all what I would call point of sale material. So it's all focused on the career site, job descriptions, employee stories, things that are designed for people that are effectively in the market looking for opportunities. And I don't think they are achieving nearly enough influence with the 80% of people who aren't in the market looking for jobs. Would you agree with that, or would you disagree with that?
I would likely agree with that, because to Bill's previous point, a lot of the content out there is not compelling. It's all very much check boxes and sameness. In fact, I agree so much that I purchased the domain employerbranding.com. I'll figure out what I end up doing with that. But
sell it to Bill.
But I could sell it to Bill. I might sell it to him for a couple of pints in London in a few weeks.
Well, that's quite a lot of money, to be honest. So, okay. Now, the other thing I wanted to ask you about was, in terms of employer brand, you said that at the very beginning, you said that you believe that it's a discipline which has been, is more mature in the UK and Europe. I'm not sure if all of Europe's true, but certainly in the UK. Why do you think that is? Because I absolutely agree with you. I feel like a lot of the conversation in the USA, in fact, in general online, is as if it's a new subject. So why do you think that it's a subject that got earlier traction faster in the UK than it did in the USA?
I think a lot more of the work was put on the recruiters. I also think that the hype engine, which picked up about 10 or so years ago, was really, really strong in the US. So it's really just started to get more mature here. I do see people with years of employer branding work and related work, not all across all of Europe, to your point, but to the UK, to Germany, to a lot of countries.
Netherlands.
Who have been hiring people with those titles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. It may also be because of the freedom of movement in the EU, the much larger population within mm-hmm. Europe. I think people are probably a bit more mobile maybe in Europe. There are a couple.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the mobility of the workforce, I think the fact that you can hop in a car and cross four countries, I think that's great. But I think that kind of mobility lends itself to more of a marketing message that's needed to grab that talent. And I also feel like please tell me if you think I'm wrong or anybody in the chat, but my impression is that the folks who have had the job a little bit longer across Europe or in different countries, we can talk specifically about the UK if you'd like, but the messages are a bit safer. It's a bit it's a bit more of a checkbox, whereas it seems that in the States, people are willing to throw more things against the wall to see what sticks. So they're a bit more desperate for the talent.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that. I think that you get some pretty bold messages in places like the Netherlands, but I think a lot of Europe is definitely a bit safer with its kind of advertising and marketing in general, not just within the employment area. So the last thing I want to ask you about is if somebody, a lot of people move from, and I hadn't seen this until the last few years, but a lot of people are moving now from jobs as recruiters into the employer brand area. What advice would you give to somebody who is thinking about making a move into employer brand? How do they develop the right skills to get the interview, to then get the job? And then what do they sort of should they be thinking about when they're first in that job? What does the transition should the transition look like?
So I think you should absolutely look at specific resources. Think about community. Think about asking other people within the role, connecting with them. The one thing I'll say though is that for every single employer branding professional that I've connected to, talked to, spent any time with, their journey is completely different than everyone else's. Meaning the principles, the nuts and bolts, the bits about how things work are relatively similar, but knowing how to be successful is very, very different depending upon the region, depending upon the company, depending upon the skill set that they were trying to recruit and those challenges. I know because I've done the same thing in different organizations and failed miserably, which is great. So it's just understanding that seek out those resources, but understand that it's only an outline and you have to build your own playbook at every company. And beyond that, I feel like you should seek out non-recruiting based resources. So seek out more traditional marketing resources, because if you learn at that level, you're typically, by the time you either learn enough or get a career within employer branding or recruitment marketing or HR marketing, you'll be at or near the same level, because traditional marketing and branding tends to be a bit ahead of the curve in that respect, in my opinion.
Absolutely. Okay. Listen, I want to just finish off by saying a couple of quick things. The first thing is, on Hung's behalf, sorry he got kicked off and wasn't able to rejoin the meeting today. I want to make a big apology to James Ellis, because for some reason, round about the time that Hung left, something changed in the live settings on here, bring it onto the screen. Something wrong with the functionality. I don't know what it is. James, we'll make it up to you. Thank you for persevering with the session. Really sorry we can't get you on, but we'll definitely bring you on when Hung's back and in a couple of weeks' time. The other thing is, over the next month, Recruiting Brainfeed Live is going to be a little bit different. Hung's traveling. He's the star of the show. And so it's really important that he's on these sessions. Next week, as I understand, he is doing a show live from Armenia, which I think I know on the map where it is. But he's going to be doing a show all about how do you go about recruiting in Armenia, live from Armenia. He's then in Hong Kong and a couple of other places. So do look out for Employer Brand Live, Recruiting Brain Food Live, which does continue each week. It just might be at slightly different times, and it might be probably better for different people in different time zones than it is for us in normally people in the US and Europe who are signing in for this. Thank you very much to Bill Berman. I'm really glad that Bill's going to be doing more writing. That's cool. That's definitely been missing for a while. Obviously, follow Bill online. You'll see Bill at pretty much any conference you go to over the next sort of 6 weeks. Brian, thanks very much for joining. Follow Brian Chaney on social media. I learn from Brian's Twitter pretty regularly, different things. He's constantly sharing new ideas and challenging on better ways of doing things. Look out for Brian's talent brand event in London. I'd love to be able to go, but there's one other thing happening somewhere else at the same time. But it looks absolutely excellent. I think you've got 100 employer branding people coming to London for that event. Thanks to everybody. There's a lot of people that have signed in for this today. So thanks for joining Recruiting Brain Food Live, and all the best. Have a great week. Have a great weekend, and see you all again sometime soon. Cheers, Brian.
Cheers.
Thanks, everybody. Bye for now.